welcome to this week's edition of The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. A 2011 study published by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's National Wetlands Inventory found that 25% of Delaware is wetlands. Some of those are considered freshwater or non-tidal wetlands and are located further inland. Although they're vital to the ecosystem, Delaware does not have any statewide regulations to protect these habitats. A new bill aims to change that. Senate Bill 9 would fill gaps in federal law governing what people can or can't do in these protected areas. This week, Delaware Public Media's Jay Shah sat down with the bill's sponsor, State Senator Stephanie Hansen, and Emily Neurel, Director of Public Policy at the Nature Conservancy, to understand what this legislation would do and why it matters.
Senator Hansen, how did you get involved in this?
Well, this has actually been something that I've been interested in since I was first elected back in 2017. But it did not seem to be something that the Department of Natural Resources leadership was interested in at the time. So an early bill that I did kind of brought the issue to attention of the Department of Natural Resources. And then we asked them to do a study on what it would take in order to put in place a state freshwater wetlands program, because Delaware is the only state in the Mid-Atlantic without state-level protection of freshwater wetlands. And freshwater wetlands are the same thing as non-tidal wetlands, so we just use those names
interchangeably.
Yeah. So, and to give you an idea of how much, you know, like how much we're talking about, there are about 300,000 acres of wetlands in the state of Delaware. That's about 25% of the state.
Mm-hmm.
About half of those are tidal wetlands. About half of those are non-tidal or freshwater wetlands.
And the tidal wetlands are the saltwater wetlands, right?
Correct. And the state already regulates them, but the state does not regulate the freshwater wetlands. And so we've always relied on the federal government to regulate the freshwater wetlands and to protect them.
Right.
And so really beginning in 2006 with an earlier Supreme Court decision called the Rapanos decision, that first began to dial away federal protection from wetlands by classifying them as wetlands that are not under federal jurisdiction. So Rapanos first dialed away about 3,500 acres. And then you had EPA dialing back again on its regulations. And so that reduced about 30,000 acres. And then you had the Sackett decision, which is the most recent. And that brings that 30,000 number now up to 75,000. So of half, about half of the freshwater wetlands that we have in the state of Delaware are no longer protected by the federal government because of changes at the federal government level on what they felt was jurisdictional. So the question became, shouldn't we begin to regulate these ourselves? If these are important resources, and we believe that they are, we need to put in place a program where we can have consistency and accountability at the state level for freshwater wetlands and what activities can or cannot be performed around them.
Right. And Emily, until this bill was introduced and this initiative began, how was your organization and any other organizations that you partnered with, how were you approaching wetland protection without having that regulatory framework or those statewide rules and regulations to enforce protections?
Sure. So what we would do and our partners would do is we certainly had internal guidelines. We would be very careful about protecting habitats. We'd be careful about protecting hydrology. We'd be careful about protecting the integrity of the wetland. But what is nice about Senator Hansen's legislation is that now there are specific state rules. And after the bill passes, knock wood, right, Senator? After the bill passes, there'll be a year-long regulatory process to develop the rules to put the flesh on the bones. And so what that means is that is going to create the consistency, regardless of the organization, follow rules that are consistent throughout the state if you want to do work either in tidal or non-tidal wetlands.
And Senator Hansen, in terms of the details of the regulations that you're trying to set up within this bill. I saw that there's regulation, permitting, and mitigation. There's those three aspects when it comes to the regulatory side. Can you just go into how those details are going to be set up?
Sure. So a program will be set up in the Department of Natural Resources for wetlands in general. So it's not just the freshwater wetlands program and the tidal program. It'll be a combined wetlands program with both tidal and non-tidal program. So what would happen is if someone wants to do a particular activity, there's first a list of activities that are exempt from regulation. So you don't need to get a permit for certain things. And to give you an idea of what some of those certain things are, those are things like silviculture, conservation practices in USDA, the Conservation District or DENREC program, hunting, fishing, trapping, duck blinds, wildlife nesting structures, mosquito control, artificial ponds and borrow pits. There's a list of about 12 different things that are
Okay.
part of exempt activities.
What
Now,
is
if
silviculture?
forestry.
Oh, okay.
And then there are some activities that are conditionally exempt, so long as the following conditions are in place, like you already have like conditionally exempt activities under an Army Corps nationwide permit with DENREC water quality certifications. And there are eight different conditionally exempt things. But if what you want to do isn't exempt or it isn't conditionally exempt, then you have to determine, okay, is it in does it meet the definition of a wetland, like what we're talking about? And if it does, is it a wetland of exceptional value that we have to treat differently? So there'll be that decision point that will be made. So wetlands that are exceptional value wetlands will be treated specially and on a one-on-one permit discussion with the department. Wetlands that otherwise fall into seven different categories are what's part of called a general permit. So you could get, so long as you follow, if you want to do the following things like voluntary wetland habitat restoration, utility, infrastructure projects, pilings, wetland walkways, so long as you want to do those things, those seven things, there'll be a general permit set up that says you can do those so long as you follow the following guidelines. And that way you don't have to negotiate a specific one-on-one permit with the Department of Natural Resources like you would otherwise. That's what has been found to be the biggest problem with the wetlands program that we currently have, is that all projects were subject to this one-on-one discussion with the department, and they were being held up in some cases for years. And so we had a current wetland program that wasn't working at the state that we've combined now with this non-tidal program, and brought in a whole new permitting process. So it's going to streamline all of that.
And is this going to be run by the Wetlands Regulatory Advisory Committee or just DENREC with the RAC?
Well, that process that I just told you is after the Regulatory Advisory Committee is finished with its work
Okay.
and the program is set up. So
Okay.
the wetlands, and then that will all be run by DENREC.
Okay.
Setting up the initial regulations is the job of the Wetlands Regulatory Advisory Committee. And so
Right.
this is the group that's made up of all the interest group that will meet for a year and come up with the initial regulations that will then be promulgated by DENREC.
So I read that this regulatory advisory committee is going to be comprised of agriculture, business folks, conservation folks, and scientific experts. I'm wondering why not include the local indigenous tribes in this conversation and in this process as well. Many advocates do believe that the local indigenous people are the original land stewards and that they should be included in these types of conversations because they have the ancestral wisdom of taking care of the land and would be the best to advise us forward. Why not include the local tribes?
Well, It'll certainly be a public process where anyone can participate if they're interested. I think the problem for us came was that we don't have a federally recognized tribe in the state of Delaware. So it was hard to say, a person from this organization that hasn't been recognized as an organization. That's that form kind of the problem that we have. We have local representation where we have the counties that are part of the regulatory advisory committee. We've had the municipalities that have been involved in coming up with the legislation as well. I think that's probably the best answer that we have.
Would you say both you, Senator Hansen and Emily, would you say that the main goal of this bill is environmental protection as a whole?
Yes.
So why limit yourself to federally recognized versus non-federally recognized? I mean, we do have the Lenape and the Nanticoke who are recognized by the state. So why not include them in the conversation? Like, instead of just, being like, yeah, it's open to the public, you can come in, instead of doing that, like, why not invite them and give them more of an intentional platform?
Several of us have relationships with those communities, and it would be very easy to reach out to them and connect with them. So Nature Conservancy actually had a conversation with the people, the tribe outside of Dover, and we looked at partnering with them and ultimately weren't able to. But one of the things I like about this bill is that it very much puts a focus on inclusivity in terms of the RAC. And it would be very easy to reach out to them based upon existing relationship and give their thoughts. Senator Hansen, yeah, I mean, I think one of the challenges is that we don't have a federally recognized tribe. So what that means is there's a group of individuals that could be approached, and the Nature
Right.
Conservancy and others have connected with them on various projects and events a few years ago. So it would be very easy to reach out to them and make sure that they know about when the hearings are, touch base, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so what that means is, I guess you can't officially, like, as a group, include them in the conversation, but you can still include them in the conversation on a more individual level because of the federal recognition limitation.
What I really like about Delaware is anybody can participate in a public hearing. That's one of the really nice things about being here is that when you have a public hearing, by definition, the public can attend and participate. What I was saying is that because there's not a federally recognized tribe, it can be hard to be, okay, you go to this one person. Does that make sense? So it's not the fact that they're, so what I was discussing is that that means that there are two to three to four to five to six good folks to connect with, and that that would be something that would be really important going forward.
That makes more sense. Thank you for explaining that. So going back to the permitting, Senator Hansen, you said there's 12 that are exempt, right?
Yes, there are 12 that are exempt.
Can you explain why those 12 activities are listed as exempt?
Because as a group, we felt that there were certain activities in or around wetland areas that were either they were going on in areas that weren't involving high value wetlands or things that necessarily even people recognized as worthy of protection. And then in other areas, it was activities being done by the Department of Natural Resources, like mosquito control. So and the government by the conservation districts and all where they have already gone through the analysis of how to be protective of these resources when they're going about doing their work.
One thing that just stood out to me was, and I mean, you mentioned this earlier, is the classification of a high value wetland. And in one of the exemption examples was a freshwater wetland that's smaller than 0.5 acres. Emily, could you just explain that distinction between the high value wetland versus a 0.5 acre wetland?
The underlying concept throughout the legislation is not all wetlands are created equal. And so there are the general wetlands, right, which will have a very straightforward process. And then there's exceptional value wetlands, which will just have a higher level of scrutiny and conversation, as Senator Hansen indicated. And in terms of the 0.5 acres or less, we had extensive conversations about this. The conversation about that piece was at least 2 years. It was ongoing. And so there were individuals in the business community who wanted to have a flat out, if it's less than 0.5 acres, then it's just automatically exempt. But there were those of us that felt an automatic exemption did not make sense because you could be 0.5 or less and still have some important value. So the compromise, and what was so elegant about this whole process, the compromise that was come up with is that if it's 0.5 or less, if it's high functioning or unique, it does mean that there has to be a permit conversation. If it's not high functioning or unique, then it's essentially just an automatic permit granting.
Thanks to the Nature Conservancy's Public Policy Director, Emily Nerl, and State Senator Stephanie Hansen for joining Arjay Shah on The Green this week. Up next, History Matters and a trip to Lewis, where a restored historic train offers a glimpse back at the area's railroad heritage. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media.